Diary of Doom.
All right, so now we've talked about all that.
All that.
And the scenes. Like I said also before, you're like an encyclopedia to me. You know so much about the genre. But
That's not really true.
I think it's true.
Dude, there's so much I don't know.
It's
astonishing.
But your passion for bands that wouldn't normally get the spotlight, even in like a platform like Vice, which did a lot to kind of highlight a lot of niche bands that had interesting stories or aesthetics to them.
Yep.
You still hit me to a lot of those bands. What's a band that JJ Kozan of the Obelisk or artist really likes that doesn't fall under your normal wheelhouse? I'm dying to know.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. The Beatles? Are the Beatles in the wheelhouse? They're kind of universal. I'm a huge Beatles fan.
See, I wouldn't have gathered that.
No? Songwriting, man. And performance. You had three genius songwriters in a band who could harmonize. Holy shit. The best thing ever. And they were like kind of the first to do it. Amazing.
And then he had the drummer.
Who is a better drummer than he gets credit for? Ringo is a good drummer and a better singer than he gets credit for, frankly. I can't hit the notes in...
Ringo?
Yeah.
And quite frankly, he looks a lot better than Paul McCartney.
Yeah, but you know what? Paul had his neck done a couple of times. He looks pretty...
Good. Really Paul.
No, exactly. Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's
fake Paul. Fake Paul had his neck done a couple of times. He looks all right.
But
Paul McCartney, actually, I've seen Paul McCartney live a couple times in the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. His drummer is the best live drummer I've ever seen. Like he has the drummer that if you were like a legendary bass player, you would have. I don't even know the guy's name, but he is incredible.
He's like the guy that would have drummed for like Jaco Pastorius.
Yes, like he's not only is he all over the kit, he's all over the kit perfectly with personality, and he sings the high parts of the songs that Paul McCartney can't sing anymore. The dude is amazing. Total non sequitur side note. But yeah, he's mind boggling. Like it's worth going to see Paul McCartney to watch that guy play. Paul, we're on a first name basis.
Got an interview coming up?
Yeah, totally. He did whenever he put out his last record, he did like a live set at Grand Central Station. That was streamed. It was at Grand Central Station. They streamed it live on YouTube. And if you can watch that, just watch the drummer. Because he's up and he's dancing and he's engaging the crowd and he's everywhere. It's amazing, this guy. But anyway, I'm a huge Beatles fan and I have been since I was, nine. And did the whole like bootleg thing during that era. But yeah, there aren't a lot of like, if I don't have like guilty pleasure bands.
Because if you like it, you like it.
Yeah.
I feel like most people are kind of, not most people, but I feel like there's a lot of people that say like, what's your guilty pleasure? And it's like, well, it's not really a guilty pleasure if you like it. It's just sort of like you have a perspective of who I am and you're kind of like allowing the opportunity to sort of make fun of me.
Yeah.
But it's like, but then you take a moment and be like, oh, I really like this. Like, you know what? I'm not a Genesis fan by any stretch.
Right.
Like I'm a fan in as much as I'm like, okay, they're an important band.
Yeah.
I'm like, if they're such an important band, how come they're not on like every single, Applebee's like wall?
Right.
But I digress.
That would be interesting though, because Applebee's has a ton of shit on the wall.
Yeah, right? I know. And I'm like, you can get the fucking puppets from that music video they did. Which, by the way, that's like that song, Land of Confusion by Genesis, post Peter Gabriel. I love that song. I think that's a great song. Right. And the music video was done with the Spitting Image puppets. And it's really funny. It's really freaking funny.
Yes.
And then, I remember just being like, yeah, I listened to The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway or whatever that album is called. That was so important. And I listened to it and I was just like, I didn't get anything from it. Yeah. I got nothing from it.
Okay.
But, at the same time, I love David Bowie. Bowie's great. But I didn't get anything from that record. But, I love that Land of Confusion song. It's a great song.
All right.
I also have a soft spot for, Valerie? That song's funny.
Okay.
It's very entertaining.
That's awesome.
But I genuinely get a lot of, joy out of it.
You feel guilty about it.
Do you? I do feel a little guilty about it. I was driving somewhere with my...
Phil Collins? Yeah. No, it wasn't Phil Collins. Never mind. Sorry.
Well, I was driving somewhere with my girlfriend, and that song came on, and she was like, "What is this?" And I'm like, "Oh, I like this song," and I put it on this playlist just because I like to throw people off.
Yeah.
Which is half true, but also I genuinely enjoy
it. Also, because you like it. I think that's valid. I'm also just not that. I'm not that interesting. There are people who are like, "Oh yeah, I like all kinds of things," and actually do. Those people exist. I'm way too, pointed in my perspective to really kind of encompass a range of things like that. For me, musical diversity is fast parts and slow parts, I'm way more directed in terms of what I appreciate. I respect someone who can be into Taylor Swift and death. Those people exist.
Oh, they do.
100%. It's never been my point of view.
But are the Beatles your ultimate curveball?
I don't have a curveball.
All right.
I don't know. Would Funkadelic be a curveball?
No, because everyone likes Funkadelic.
Exactly. Everyone likes Funkadelic. That's it.
Funkadelic is good. It's innovative.
Fucking A. I'm just not that interesting. I'm really not. I wish I was. I wish I was more interesting.
Well,
I'm a boring suburbanite who likes rock and roll. I don't know.
Well, then we'll move on to... So, the band that we're going to talk about...
I need an answer for that question. I've been asked that question before, and I have no answer for that question. I should start liking a band just so I can answer that question.
Nah, then you just be a hipster.
Yeah, you're right. I don't care. The hipsters won, man.
They did kind of win.
The hipsters won. They were right.
I started wearing skinny jeans because of them.
Dude, the hipsters were 100% right. When that shit happened, when the sword came out, that's another thing. That was another thing. When the sword came out, people were pissed about that shit. And I was never a huge sword fan.
See, I was a big sword fan.
I was never a huge sword fan. I saw them at South by Southwest in 2006 or 2007. They opened the Relapse Records Showcase for their demo. And I bought their demo and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then they put out the record and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then they put out the second record and I don't even think I listened to it. But people were mad at that band because they were young and cool. But you know what? Young and cool was exactly what was needed at that fucking time. Because everything else was old and not as cool. And they brought an entire new generation of people in. And it was fucking hipster metal and this and that. But it was also vibrant and creative. And even though it was playing off something that had happened before, right? Because the sort of... The sort at their outset were basically doing Matt Pike light and Melvin's riffs, but they were doing it new, and I think you're starting to see that again with some bands now. right? Like, there's Toke, okay? You brought up Toke before. Toke, to me, sound exactly like Sourvein sounded, you know, 15 years ago. But they're doing it in a new, fresh way. Monolord, earlier Monolord, same thing. And Monolord has kind of grown past that at this point. But, like, the first Monolord record, the first two Monolord records, it's like, these are Electric Wizard riffs. What's happening here? But what's happening there is the same thing that's happening with Toke, the same thing that's happening with Yatra, is they're tapping into a core of a thing in a way that makes it fresh again. And they're bringing,
it's like a third wave.
Yeah, they're bringing in new, it's a new perspective, right? Like, and you're, I think,
It's the modern age. I mean, it's the merchandising. It's using the platforms.
Right.
It's getting out there. Right. It's a whole new perspective on it.
It's a reboot of sorts.
Yeah. But even Elder, like, you know, we've been mentioning Elder a lot.
Yeah, kind of alluded to Elder.
And you know, they're another band that I actually didn't know about until my friend was like, hey, do you know Elder? I think you would like them.
Yeah.
He's like, I smoked a blunt with them one time. I'm not even sure I like the music that much, yeah, but I think you're gonna like it. So I checked them out, and I was like, this band is like the next, like,
yeah.
Elder is amazing, and there might be an Elder breakthrough at some point. I don't know when it's gonna be, but
I think if Elder wanted to, they,
I agree,
they could have signed to a bigger label than their
but
own.
But
that was their interest.
I look at them kind of in the same way I look at like a band like Death Heaven, where Death Heaven tapped into a genre that really was not that he was even acknowledged by the public eye,
yeah,
but more so disacknowledged, because people looked at like black metal and said, ugh, those horrible people in Europe that are burning churches.
When they looked at it at all.
It was just bad. And they saw the worst parts of it. And then, you know, I saw Death Heaven at like that, whatever it was, like 285 Kent, which was like a really, honestly, a pretty shitty venue in Williamsburg that Vice eventually wound up taking over. So there was like some weird shit that happened there. But I saw this band before they played Psycho Las Vegas and Levitation. And I know that sounds very hipster, but they were kind of like the first metal band that I knew of that had sort of like tapped into the mainstream. And I'm like, okay, there are more people that are talking to them that are not just like people on the internet.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
And I went to go see them and I was like, this is freaking weird. Like, this is a very intense show.
Right.
Very strange. And I kind of look at Elder in that same way. I'm like, I think Elder has the potential to be like a Death Heaven, to be nominated for a Grammy, to be doing like very creative things, to be consistently labeled like a very well-regarded band that's doing like really interesting. And they're definitely a divisive band. People seem to love them or hate them, you know?
Yeah.
Like black metal folks either like them or hate them because they're not genuine.
Exactly.
And then metal fans are like, they're too mainstream
or we
think they're great. And I think Elder kind of, it's one of those bands that falls into that where I'm like, they're sort of straddling the line, because I think that they have the integrity and the direction to be a band like that, but I don't know if they want to be a band like that.
Well,
and that might be what's keeping them back from that, and that's fine, because I love what they do. I love their records. I think that they're very intelligent guys that do and pour a lot of effort into what they create.
Yeah.
And it's consistently the most interesting thing that comes out when they do, like, I put them up there with like Yob. Like, Yob is another band that I think, like, Yob should have won a Grammy. Like, if they were going to be a Grammy band, and that's okay that they're not, but they're a band that I'm like, they consistently should be in the top records every year.
Yeah.
Not just our Raw Heart. It's amazing. I'm not arguing that. Like every Yob record is friggin' brilliant.
Not a bummer in the bunch. I have consistently, Yob Catharsis, 2003, when I heard that record, like, okay, right? Single records that hit you, yeah, Catharsis is a record for me that showed me the potential of heavy to me more than just loud and aggressive. Like that record spoke to me in a way that very few records had and very few have since. An utter landmark for me, and the fact that they went on then to sign to Metal Blade and do the Illusion of Motion and the Unreal Never Lived before breaking up and then coming back, you know, as you say, every Yob record, and you're right, every Yob record is something special. But I think part of what would tie Yob and Elder together, in my mind at least, is the fact that they've kind of made their own way, right? Consciously made their, like, drawn their path for themselves in terms of their career, but that there's a consistent creative progression as well, right? Like every Yob record shares elements, every Elder record shares elements, but there's always forward movement as well. And even as regards Elder, even between Lore and Reflections of a Floating World, which are inarguably in my mind the two most similar Elder records, right? Like the Elder self-titled and Dead Root Stirring, totally different. Dead Root Stirring and Lore, totally different. Lore and Reflections, not totally different, right? Like they're in kind of a similar vein. And you know what? Yob, Clearing the Path to Ascend, and Our Raw Heart, kind of the same thing, right? Like kind of in a similar vein, in a way that their records have not always been, right? Like Great Sensation is a very different record from Atma, is a very different from Clearing the Path.
But it's the same thing as Bowie doing the Berlin Trilogy, yeah, as opposed to when he was doing Spiders from Mars.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, but there's something to be said for presentation, too.
Sure, but it's the idea of, like, movements, like a period.
Yes.
You know, you're going,
yes,
through a certain period. Yeah. You're going through,
totally,
a certain thing.
Well, yeah. Well, each album capturing a moment.
The first David Bowie record does not sound anything like the last David Bowie record, nor does it sound like, you know, Ziggy Stardust, nor does it,
right,
sound like Station to Station.
Right.
So I think that case has to be made for these bands, and yes, the similarity is the riff, the simplicity to some degree, except I don't think Yob is a simple band.
No.
There's nothing about that band that's simple. And
who's arguing Yob is simple?
Well, by the argument that it's three people, a guitar, bass, drums, and a vocalist. Like that's not a lot to be reckoned with, but if you look at what they write about and how they present it and how they use technology, it creates something unique. And I don't know if I've admitted this before, I don't remember. This will only be like the 11th or 12th or 13th episode of this podcast, and
okay,
I'm already forgetting things.
Yeah,
but
no,
I have never seen an entire Yob set. I've seen most of Yob sets, and I've always had to leave because of, like, you know, I had to just...
Something
else. Something. Like an obligation, whatever it may be. Personal or conflicting.
Yeah, yeah. I get it.
But in the times I've seen them, it's not like anything else I've seen. And I still say, and it was not even one of the best shows I've ever seen. It was not even a full show. Not that it was one of the best, because I think it is one of the best, actually. One of the best shows that I saw without seeing the full show was probably Heavy Temple with when it was all the girls line up, Bellwitch, when they had the whole, they did the whole like video, everything, and then Yob. And I'm like, this is a perfect lineup. There's not a damn thing wrong with this.
No.
It was so unique and so special and so perfect. And the next time I saw Yob was last year at Psycho Las Vegas, and it was also super cool because they were playing outside,
right,
much to Mike Scheidt's chagrin, because the heat was fucking with his tech. But there was something still super cool about seeing Yob on a stage with a bunch of like ancient ruined temples. Like, it was very cool.
Yeah.
But that show that I saw prior to was just, I have to see this band in its entirety. There's something about them that hits home.
I can only recommend you make that happen.
Exactly.
At the next available opportunity. The first time Yob came to New York was around 2005. My wife was working as a probation officer in Paterson, New Jersey, which...
Oh, yeah. I know Paterson.
Yeah, which for anyone who doesn't know Paterson is... You may have heard of Camden. Paterson is, like, just a notch below Camden in terms of, like, New Jersey's most dangerous cities. She was working as a probation officer.
I mean, also, like, very historic and has a lot of history.
Totally.
And there's just a lot of things that have been dealt wrong with Paterson.
Right.
But yeah.
It was corruption. Massive corruption.
It's a tough
ongoing.
Beat. It's a tough beat.
Yes. So she was working there at the time before embarking on a much different life path. And we went to see Yob play at a venue called The Pyramid in Manhattan that is no longer there, of course. It was a basement room that had $2 like plastic cups of Rolling Rock that they served all night. And you would just go and drink 50 of them, and it was like a low drop ceiling space.
That's how you make money off of buying cases of beer as opposed to like kegs.
Yep. That was it's exactly what it was. It's exactly what it was. And we were at the show with a friend of mine as well who had a broken foot and still went because it was Yob in 2005. And it got to be like, I don't even know how many bands were on the bill, but it was a weeknight. My wife had to go to work the next morning. And it got to be 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's the first time I met Mike Scheidt. And it got to be 2 o'clock in the morning and Yob had not yet played. And my wife was like, we need to leave. Like, I need to be to work in 6 hours. Like, we need to go. And I didn't get to see Yob that night. And then Yob broke up. And I'm going to tell you, like, with all seriousness, it was a strain on my marriage. When Yob broke up, like, I'm not even kidding. Like, I like held that against my wife for 4 years.
Jesus.
Like, because she kept me from seeing Yob, and I saw Midian in the meantime. Right, Midian came through on the Age Eternal record when Mike was doing that. But then Yob got back together, and I've seen Yob a bunch of times ever since. It's been, you know, the wound healed.
But like, I hope you apologized.
No. I wasn't wrong. But, I mean... No, I didn't apologize. She should have apologized and has. But, like, yeah, no. That was, like... That's a special band. And you know... I think if Yob gets to the point where, like, they're doing the... I think if Yob gets to the point where they're doing the, like, high on fire Grammy win, it'd be much in the same vein, where it would happen, you know, later in their career, as kind of an acknowledgement of the work they've done over the career, which I think you could easily make the argument High on Fire's Grammy win was.
I agree.
I would probably say the same with Elder, though. I mean, Elder would need to... For me, Elder's ultimate trajectory is like they will be told a lot through this record that they're doing. It's their first record without Matt on drums. They've really kind of solidified as a four-piece. And I haven't heard it yet, which I'm sad about a little bit. But I think when that comes out in April... Like, that's, I don't want to call it make or break, because it's not make or break. Elder will still be Elder, but it's, but it will be very telling
I think, as to what they're going to do, because they're due for trying something else a little bit.
Yeah, and I think people are probably looking at, you know, the this genre, as I've said before, it's when it hits home, it hits deeply home.
Yeah.
Because you could probably, like I would say you could put out, like, you could put out 10 Doom records from any given band, and 9 of them will be good, and 1 of them will be absolutely exceptional. Like, you'll listen to it. You know what I mean?
There's also a lot of shitty Doom.
Yeah, I agree. But when it hits home, it really hits home. And I mean, like...
True.
Like, Our Raw Heart is a great example of a record that got a lot of recognition from, like, music fans. You know, like, I remember there was somebody on, I think he might have been, like, WFMU was talking about how much they liked it, you know. The Sciences is another great example of that, of a record that really, like, hit home. And, like, very bizarre that, like, that record didn't get, like, a Grammy nod, but whatever, it's fine.
The Sciences also had the benefit of coming out through Third Man Records.
Yeah, and it also had the element of surprise. Like, there was a lot that went into it. But anyway, this is a bit kind of a roundabout way of saying that, like, I think there's a lot of potential for, not more mainstream recognition, but I would say, like, a broader audience that appreciates music for this genre. And I think the band that I asked you to listen to this week was a good example of that, really. And the band that JJ and I listened to for this week is Ancestors.
Yay.
And they're an LA-based, you know, Doom outfit. But as I was going through her discography, I found that they were one of those bands that kind of just got the Doom label, I felt like, sort of, like, slapped on. Like, upon first listen, and I liked pretty much all their discography, but they're not the most recent record they put out, but the one before that was my favorite of the ones that I've listened to.
Oh, In Dreams and Time?
Yeah. And I
2011 In Dreams and Time, yeah. No.
And I listened to them on Spotify.
You know, I was kind of relieved when you said Ancestors. I'm actually pretty familiar with this band.
Well, I actually had Googled, or not Googled, I had actually looked something up on the Obelisk, and you were talking about, like, forthcoming records, and it was an older article, and you said, oh, this is a record coming out, and the fact that, like, we still have releases, I think it might have been The Sciences, and you're like, we still have releases on, you know, on the docket from XXXXX band, and one of them was Ancestors, and I was like, that's not a name that most people would, like, recognize, like, from the get-go.
It's too bad, because they are a good band.
It was In Dreams and Time is, I think...
2011.
2012, according to Spotify. Ooh. I don't know if that's correct.
I don't know if I'm correct. I'm probably wrong.
But...
No, it is cheap.
Okay.
Some year older.
That record was incredible. But as I was listening to them, I had the immediate reaction upon listening to... Because I went with the first... Because you told me to listen to, is it First Light? First Light, which is the closing track on...
Yep, on In Dreams and Time.
On In Dreams and Time. But I started from the beginning, of course. And when I listened to it, I said, almost immediately off the first track, I said, this is a band that should appeal to a lot of people. Because they're taking every single good trope from doom metal and doing the right things with it. They're taking a tried and true formula and punching it in with a bunch of other things. Like, when I listened to the most recent record, the one that came out in 2018.
Suspended in Reflections.
It had a very post-rock vibe to it.
Totally, yeah.
And post-rock is one of those genres that people seem to just, like, enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, you could have 15 post-rock bands, people are like, oh, I like this. And as long as you have a post-rock band in your life, you're good. But listening to that record, I was like, this is very post-rock. They could definitely tap into that post-rock market. And post-rock is a kind of a cool genre because they can play a lot of festivals and they can play a lot of different kinds of shows.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt about Ancestors. I'm like, this is a band that could open up for... This is a band that could open up for Sleep. This is a band that could open up for Dream Theater. This is a band that could open up for a multitude of acts. And if... bookers wanted to, they could probably book this on like a New York City music festival. Yeah. I could see them playing a Coachella. I could see them playing a Muddy Roots. I could see them playing. I could see them playing something in like as big as Governor's Ball, honestly. Yeah. The thing about the smaller acts, sure.
The thing about Ancestors, though, is that they never played much.
That's kind of what I gather.
It's an interesting story about Ancestors, as you mentioned, from L.A.
And I don't know a lot of L.A. doom.
Well, we've got some rock bands out there, but yeah. They got signed to TP Records in like 2007, 2008 off the strength of their demo. And their demo was two songs. And the album became Of Sound Mind. And Of Sound Mind was essentially their demo. And it was like heavy, epic, sleep style stoner metal-ish stuff. Kind of turned out that was never the band Ancestors intended on being. And so Ancestors pretty quickly over the course of like their second record and then, no, you know what, you're right, In Dreams of Time was 2012, because in 2011 they put out an EP called Invisible White. And like that really kind of pushed them in the vein more of like progressive, kind of a heavy progressive post-rock, like you said, and was way more emblematic of the band that they apparently always wanted to be. But at the same time, Of Sound Mind was so awesome at being this other thing that Ancestors had to then kind of face the fact that they were working in defiance of the expectation of an audience that they were just in the process of building off of like their first and to an extent their second records. So Ancestors basically decided to say screw it and be the band they wanted to be, which is how you round up with Invisible White and Dreams in Time, and then a 7-year break before they put out Suspended in Reflections.
Because when I looked this band up, and my reference point for this is a good book called the Doom Metal Lexicanum. It's by, and I don't remember the author's name, but I'm not going to look it up right now because I've said it a bunch on the show. And I just flipped to it randomly and I said, this is going to be the one. I'm like, I don't even know if JJ's going to know this band.
Yeah.
And then you had very enthusiastic response. And they only list one record in that entire encyclopedia.
Which one?
By them, from 2017. Like the most recent record.
Oh, Suspended in Reflections? That wasn't last year?
Or 2018. Yeah, so maybe it was a typo or a mistake or something like that. But they had none of their back catalog. And I'm like, how could they not have that one record?
Yeah.
Because it's so brilliant. I mean, I listened to it and I'm like, this has the same depth and weight and impact as Pink Floyd's Animals, in my opinion. And I see a lot of, I know Pink Floyd is like a very boring comparison to a lot of like psychedelic rock bands.
Yeah.
Like, you know, King Buffalo, people are like, oh, they're like, I'm like, hey, dude, sure, you know, you're just thinking like smoke pot and chill.
Right.
But with Ancestors, I can hear what they're going for. I hear like that multi-layered effect they're going for that Pink Floyd had, and I think...
But there's also a clarity to it.
Correct, yeah. They have a more consistent sound. It's not like a Dark Side of the Moon, which every song sounds very different.
Right.
But they have that same like perspective, integrity, vision that Pink Floyd has. And I think that's why people just sort of lump bands in, because they're just like, I don't know what to think of this because it's beyond my realm of thought. So it's progressive rock, or it's doom metal, or it's stoner metal, or whatever. Even if it isn't.
Because categorization is easy and fun.
And because metalheads are dependent on it.
Yes. Huge.
But I love that. In Dreamtime, I think, is probably a perfect record. I listened to it once and I said, this is amazing.
Yeah, this is brilliant. It is.
This band should be getting much more recognition.
I still go back to that album.
It's amazing.
And when it came out, it was like,
you know, a holy shit kind of record.
The really the closest thing I could compare them to would be Devin Townsend.
Yeah, I could see
because
that.
He's got that progressive element to him, but there's like a lot of layers to it. Yeah. I also find that their vocal ranges are like kind of similar. He's got kind of that like operatic roar that Devin Townsend has.
Yeah.
So that was I find a lot more in tune with them with Devin Townsend than I would with, you know, like any stoner metal band.
Well, see, that's the thing. But when they came out, that was very much not the case. Like when, you know, and when they put out the Invisible White EP, it was jarring how different it was, and how kind of, you know, in hindsight, and even a year later when they followed up with In Dreams of Time, like it became bold. You know, it was bold. It was a bold move on their part to become that band that they actually wanted to be, and Suspended in Reflections kind of built off that, and pushed it forward in an even more progressive direction. And you know, what I think is what I think Suspended in Reflections kind of kind of gave up from In Dreams and Time was a little bit of the weight, a little bit of the like the tonal weight, but In Dreams and Time, like, you have that balance between progressive vision, progressive intent, and sonic weight and clarity of what they want to do that just absolutely nailed it. And the song First Light in particular, like, the sweep of that song and the way that song progresses through its movements, and even just that guitar solo in the second half of that song is one of the best guitar solos I've ever heard. And I'm not like a guitar guy at all, right? Like, I don't.
Yeah, neither am I. If there's one thing that I can safely say right now on this podcast is that, you know, when people start talking about gear and like how they do things,
right? Totally.
I don't understand it.
No.
I don't understand tech. I don't understand that aspect of it at all. I find it very interesting.
Yeah.
It's cool to hear what people talk about.
Yeah.
I can listen to Matt Pike talk about his pedal board for an hour.
Sure.
There's something about it where he makes me understand how it works. But I don't know how it works. When people, because sometimes I listen to podcasts and they talk about like mixes and how things work. And I don't understand that, but I understand music from a different perspective.
Right.
And that's because I've never played music. I've never learned an instrument. I've wanted to, but I don't think I'm cut out for it. And I'm too late in my life to figure it out. Because quite frankly, it's true. As you get older, you get dumber. You soak onto things
daily
differently.
Yeah.
And whether that's like the fact that, you know, social media and cell phones are so dialed into our basic life, and your focus is on other things because you're too focused at work, whatever it is. But I found it very hard. I bought a bass, and I couldn't bring myself to do it because I just realized I don't have the drive and I don't have the mental space for it, and I don't know if everybody exactly is.
Yeah.
So I put it down and I kind of came to terms with it, and it'll go away eventually.
Yeah.
And by go away, I mean I will sell it to somebody.
Right.
But yeah, you take it from here. I went off on a tangent.
No, that's fine. Tangent is good.
You're talking about gear and you're talking about guitar. Like, I agree. I don't
the
know how it works.
The guitar solo at the end of First Light. In thinking of kind of, I guess, going back to that basic idea of finding something that speaks to you, that resonates, like that moment, that sweep, and when the strings come in that song, like it's something you feel physically. Right?
It's beauty in a bubble.
Yeah, really, yeah, yes. Well said, yes. It is,
and
it's rare.
Yeah,
it's rare.
And I always think that about, you know, the records that make like a top 50 or a top 25 or whatever it is. And I always think about those records and I think, like, you know, there's the bands that get number one, but like, are they ever gonna get that number one again? And sometimes they do. Metal tends to repeat itself.
Yeah.
Like, they always put like a certain band at number one.
It's a matter of consistency, I guess.
But then there's always those records too that you hear about and you're like, huh, this band has always been on like a best of list, but they've never been number one. They're always like here.
Right.
And it's always like, are they doing that because they people know the record is actually perfection and they just don't want to say it? Or they just don't know what to do with it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no. I know what you mean. I often look at people's number six.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm almost like, what's number one going to be, and am I going to be shocked by what it is, you know?
Yeah. Last year, man. Easiest year ever.
Last year?
No, I'm sorry, year before.
2018. I mean,
Sleep.
Yeah, there's no arguing. But, I mean, that was also the year of, like, Windhand and Yob. I mean, but, and last year was an interesting year because 2018, in my opinion, was like the year of Doom. There were like so many impeccable releases. But last year, you started to see a little bit of a decline there, but you saw a death metal making a comeback, but it was different. It was more like the old school. Like, it was more like Carcass. It was more like Obituary.
Right.
Last year I had four death metal records on my best of. It was Gate Creeper, Blood Incantation, Cattle Decapitation, and man, I'm blanking on the other one. Tomb Mold.
Oh, Tomb Mold. Yeah.
And all four of those records are brilliant. They're amazing.
Have you heard Temple of Void?
I've heard of them. I have not listened to them yet.
They're out of Detroit, I want to say. They have a new record coming out on Shadow Kingdom. If it's in your promos, check it out or go back. Their other stuff is on Bandcamp.
They
spell of with a V.
Kingdom of Hell?
No, Temple of
Void. Temple of Void. I'm thinking of a different band. Kingdom of Hell.
Yeah.
Or I'm thinking of Toilet of Hell.
You might be thinking of Toilet of Hell. But check that out because, I mean, very much death doom, but like leans to one or the other in a cool way that might kind of speak to that drive to the extreme.
And I'll be interested to see what this year is going to be because
busy.
There's a lot of bands that are expected to have releases, but within the last month of January, I've already listened to quite a few good records.
Yeah.
I mean, Yatra's new record is fantastic. There's a band out of a very interesting band, but maybe interesting just from the fact that it's not a US band, and I'm not trying to sound disrespectful or offensive or anything, but it's a like blackened death metal band out of China called Vengeful Spirit, or I'm sorry, Vengeful Spectre, or an even cooler name.
That is a better
And name. It is incredible. As of the day of this recording, February 5th, 2020, it's the best record I've heard this year. But even on top of that, like the Insect Arc's new record has been great. And there was a couple other ones that are really good. Midnight's new record is very good. So we're off to a pretty good start, and I'm excited to see what the rest of the year has in store for us.
Today is what, February 5th? I keep a running list.
So do I.
Of the year's best albums, so that when it's list time, I can go back to it. As of right now, it has 24 entries.
Wow.
And some of that stuff isn't out yet. Some of that's, but like, that's pretty striking to me, that I would be there this early in the year. It's, and you know, there's so much more to come, which is on a separate list that I'm looking at right now, and oh my God, it's overwhelming. I don't want to think about it. But yeah, it's last year was an interesting year because it was, 2019 was an interesting year because, as you say, 2018 was a given, was so easy, but last year wasn't. You know, last year I had a really hard time picking an album of the year. Let me move my hand so that I can actually record it. And it wound up being Monolord, No Comfort, in part because I thought what they were doing was an important step forward for them in a way that not a lot of other people's records were.
It was I love the record. It wasn't my number one, but it was in my top records of the year.
Yeah.
And it was a very good step forward because I just didn't think that they hit the right step with their follow-up. It felt a little bit more of the same. And I really like Monolord a ton. And I think a lot of their impact is their live show. They have a very, very good live show.
Yeah.
Obviously, Mika Haki is an amazing bass player and brings a lot of energy to the stage. He is incredible.
He is fun to watch.
Yeah. But the record they put out last year was a good evolution for them, where they were not just the riff, the bass line, and this for 10 minutes. There was a lot of, I don't want to say orchestration, but there was a lot of...
Yeah, no.
But in a way, orchestration. Like, they just were like, we can't do it again. And they really put themselves in the right direction where they were crafting their songs in a more elaborate way, but also in a more digestible way.
Yeah.
That it was great. It was a really incredible record.
But at the same time, they didn't lose any of the depth.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, they didn't... You know.
But they did a 10-minute music video that was like a post-apocalyptic mini movie, you know, and
like they do.
Their writing got better. They were dealing with some shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, my favorite record of last year that I thought was the most impactful was Lingua Ignotas. It was incredible. I mean,
speaking of dealing with some shit. Lingua Ignota, no, amazing record. Amazing record.
Yeah, and there was no shortage of bad records last year.
No.
If anything, 2019 started out kind of slow for me, then got better.
Yeah, I picked up. By September, it was like, oh God, okay, it's been a year.
Yeah, when it got down to like, I usually do my year-end list like very like towards the end of the year, because there's always records that come out at the very end of December.
Right? Solace put out their record in December. It's like, what are you guys doing?
That's like when they do urine shows.
Yeah.
Like, they like, oh, the best shows. And I'm like, there's nobody that's going to be talking about sleep at Chicago for three nights.
No, exactly.
And everybody that I know that went to those shows, like, loved them. And no one's going to talk about those shows. Yeah. And the only people that are going to know about the shows are the people that went to those three nights. And I know people who went to all three nights.
That's kind of nice, too.
So, but... That's where we are with Ancestors. I don't have the info in front of me. I'm sure you can look them up and buy their records. Go buy their records. They're great.
The Suspended and Reflections came out on Pelagic Records, which is the label owned by Robin Stapp from The Ocean, German band The Ocean.
The Ocean is great, too.
They're
very cool band.
Yes, very cool.
One of the only bands I know that is like, we're going to record our records with the vocalist and without the vocalist.
Yeah. That's out through that label. In Dreams and Time, it's on Bandcamp, I know that. If you can like lump through that, they're around. But they don't really tour, which is something that in speaking to like them as a band that could have appealed to a lot of people, I agree with that in terms of their basic sound, but they never really hit the road in a way that would have allowed them to do that. But if you're listening to this and you have the time,
thank you.
If you're listening to this and you have the time, check out that band because your life will be better for it. that's the best way I could say that. Yeah, they'll make your day better.
And as we're wrapping up, is there anything you want to plug about yourself? Obviously, you can go keep up to date with everything Doom related over at the Obelisk. It's theobelisk.net. Not .com.
It's .net. It's a relic of the .net.
Yeah.
Age. Yeah. It's a relic of several things. I don't think so. I'm on Gimme Radio. If you know what Gimme Radio is, you can listen on an app. It's the show's on every Friday, 5 p.m. starting on the 14th. It's moving to a good time slot, 5 p.m. Eastern time. If you're into that or just, I don't know. Thank you, I guess, is can I, yeah, no, okay. You know what? I don't want to plug anything. Gimme Radio has been very good to me. I'm not saying I don't want to plug Gimme Radio, but they're very kind to let me have a show. But I don't want to plug anything. I want to say thank you. to anyone who listens to this, to anyone who like remotely gives even the slightest of craps about anything that has ever that I've ever posted about or written about or anything. It's so deeply appreciated. Like, I cannot even begin to say how much, like, it means to me that, like, that there's a response. Like, it's so unfathomable and so unreal that someone that someone could take something that I wrote and I don't know, it changed something or feel something different than they felt 5 minutes ago. And I know, again, I know it's not about me, and I tell myself that all the time. It's never about me. But, like, I'm still a part of it. And it's amazing, and people are supportive and kind, and it's just so, so wonderful. So. If you hear this, if you read The Obelisk, if you whatever, on social media or something, just anything, just thank you so much. Thank you so much. So much. And Dylan, thank you for having me here and letting me run my mouth about silly grunge that I listened to when I was 10.
Well, the good people at Blue Ale House also thank you for your three sweet and iced teas. But no, yes. Seriously, like, this was great. Super big pleasure to have you on to talk about this. I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Hey, man,
to talk about.
I live like 15 minutes that way, so I'm around.
Yeah, and I'm here in Jersey for the time being. But yeah, this has been great. And, you know, like I said, you can find JJ over at theobelisk.net. You can follow him on Instagram at HPTaskmaster. Taskmaster. Whatever that means.
Oh, it's a play on...
Is it H.P. Lovecraft?
It's a play on Bongzilla's H.P. Keithmaster.
Oh, okay.
When I started The Obelisk, I didn't want to use my own name because it's kind of a dumbass name, right? What the hell kind of name is that? My name, JJ. What, like, what the hell kind of name is
JJ? I don't know.
JJ,
The Obelisk sounds pretty cool.
No, yeah, no. That's a fine name. Actually, that's shortened from what my Stoner Rock column at Metal Maniacs was, which was Feast of the Obelisk, which was the funniest way I could think of to say eat a dick. So I took HP Taskmaster because HP Keithmaster by Bongzilla, and I thought the Taskmaster thing was funny, and the guys at Metal Sucks had silly nicknames, and I didn't want to use my own name because it felt like it was feeding my ego. So that seemed like a decent alternative. I just didn't want to see my dumb name plastered all over everything. And eventually, I kind of got over it. But yeah, so that's how that wound up being kind of the Instagram thing. And for a while, every post was tagged by HP, and then I just got kind of tired of people calling me HP. So that was,
you're like, my name is JJ.
Right. It's also, it's two letters. It's just a different two letters. All right. That's it.
That's
great. No, that's it. I'm sorry.
But like
all right,
I said,
thank you. Different rant.
Obelisk.net. Go visit it for all your Doom Stoner sludge.
And thank you if you did.
You can follow him on at HP Taskmaster on Instagram and buy
see adorable pictures of my son.
And buy some Obelisk merch. It's available.
Which
I have to talk to you
you're
about
so
the sweatpants.
Right. I should. Oh, the sweatpants are amazing.
We'll talk about that
afterwards. That's a thing I should plug. MIBK, Made in Brooklyn Silk Screeners.
Yes.
Hosts Obelisk merch. Please support Dave and Made in Brooklyn. Whether you buy Obelisk merch or whether you buy anything else, that dude prints. He does amazing work. He is passionate and dedicated and deeply, deeply admirable in doing it. You should really support him one way or the other. Again, if you buy an Obelisk shirt or Obelisk sweatpants, which I love.
I strongly encourage you do so.
I love my Obelisk sweatpants. It's the only piece of Obelisk merch that I personally will wear because I'm not walking around in my blog's t-shirt. But like, the sweatpants are amazing. But yeah, whether you buy Obelisk merch or other merch, support Dave and Made in Brooklyn Silk Swingers. That's it.
There you go. All right, that will do it for this chapter of the Diary of Doom. And we will be back next week with another chapter and another person to tell their story.